21. Lacking sharp claws or warm fur or tearing teeth or tremendous speed, what we have is brain. Legs, arms, certain places on the torso. In the smoke and noise, Chun Suit Crawl limped on one leg and one half leg into the jungle where Chun was waiting. This had always been the thing that had to be done quickly and correctly. Only some things could be predicted. The suit had to be intact when Lank damaged it, and not intact afterward. This could not be faked. Wounds would have to be fresh. The mangled suit eased open its creaking half-torn joints. Chun stepped inside. The visor portion was wrenched off, her face exposed. Her lower left leg was cold where the suit was gone. "Leg, huh?" said Chun. "Would you like me to sedate you?" said the suit. "Fuck no," said Chun. "We've been through this. Pain relief, yes, but I need to be sharp." "He will regain consciousness within 3 minutes," said the suit. "It is conceivable that my structure bore the brunt of the explosion." "Yeah," said Chun. "But the leg's not going to be okay, is it?" The suit's right arm held a jagged piece of metal. If Augur hadn't saved me in the mall, I would have lost more than this, thought Chun. So suck it up, Buttercup.
"It is clean," said the suit. "When this is over, I have applied some anesthetic. I can suture."
"Just do it," said Chun. "Make it look real."
The suit raised the glinting blade and brought it down in the meat of her thigh, scraping against the bone. Even with the anesthetic, the pain momentarily blinded her, her vision flashing black and bright, her stomach roiling. The wound sucked at the metal, trying to hold it in place, as the suit pulled it up and back like a terrible, unsurvivable wound to the femoral artery.
"Don't think. Don't be here. Think of anything else. Think of the fragments of nail varnish at the edges of your nails, and how there have been parties. Bodies moving through space, slow and fast, stinking of sweat and life."
The pain was louder than thought. There had not been enough time for the anesthetic to take. It was serrated lines scored through the inside of her body like the tines of a fork. She was being scooped out, and she gasped and vomited a little bile into her mouth. And then the pain closed her mind, and she was gone. It was day, extraordinarily. Chun's suit buzzed. Her visor was down and her earpieces in place. But the suit was communicating with her now by vibrating the bones of her skull. No one else could hear it. Very quietly and far away, the suit said, "Play dead." The suit was no longer as innocent as it had been. The suit said, "Don't move. Just don't fucking move." Chun focused on her painful, shallow breaths. Tiny sips of air, barely breathing. The suit said, "Move less than that." The sun wheeled around, gaping, a hot mouth filled with spines. Lank Sketlish was staring at her. The suit gushed a supply of thick blood from a freezer stote box, artificial blood, emergencies only, and what was this but an emergency, across Jun's thigh, as if her femoral artery were severed. It must have given her something to calm her. How else was she not trembling with pain and terror? She kept her eyes glassy. She did not focus. Sips of air. Her head pounded.
"Fuck," said Lank. "She's fucking dead."
Chun's suit communicated to Lank's suit, counting down her chances of survival. 17%, 15%, 12%. Chun's suit made itself appear to be trying to save her life, injecting gels into the wounds, trying to cauterize bleeding. She shifted a little, and the suit made the wound in her leg pump harder, the lazy trickle turning into a momentary sharp gush like an ejaculation. 9%, 4%, 2%, 0%, 0%. He looked at Chun. Though his face was hidden by his visor, she felt his eyes locking onto hers.
"You idiot," he said. "We could have figured this out together."
He towed at her body, tipping her suit onto its back. she remained very still. And at last, Lenxgetlish turned his broad shoulders and walked back toward his mountain, leaving Jun behind him. Jun and her suit waited until night had descended over the jungle, thick and dark and rustling and shrieking, the night as full of life as the day. In the dark, the suit cauterized her wound and fitted member skin over the top. She would always have a scar. Her leg would never be quite as strong as the other. The suit led her back to the campsite, walking ahead of her like a sister, its palm against her palm. The suit found replacement parts for itself in one of the stoat boxes and fitted them. It was more obviously a pleasure suit now. One of the legs was olive-skinned and human-looking. Part of the interior was lined with a suite of tactile fabrics in shimmering animal prints that didn't look designed for survival. A few parts were missing. The left hand was replaced with a climbing grab gauntlet. It brought itself back together and then opened itself to let her back inside. It was warm in the suit and soothing to her wound. She felt they were friends now. She said, "What's going to happen?" The suit said, "Lenk isn't likely to come back here for a few days. We'll take what we need tonight and make a new camp to the south, away from his mountain." They worked until dawn, lashing supplies together on a cart, walking south. They walked until Jun fell asleep in the motion and woke still on the move. They reached a river to the south in the late afternoon. The suit told her they had traveled more than 25 miles, and they were in a section of around 100 square miles where they would be unobservable from the mountain or anywhere near it. Jun asked the suit for reruns of Poker Face and games of Sudoku and Animal Crossing. She crawled inside a reinforced igloo tent and imagined she was far away. She ate self-heating rice pudding. She slept that night and dreamed of the time before and of her mother. Her mother gliding through the jungle on a golden cloud, looking at all that had gone on here and laughing loudly as children do when adults make fools of themselves. Of course, thought Jun when she woke. Of course. "Did you offer this option to the others?" said Jun. "What we just did? Pretending to be dead?" Silence. "Don't fucking lie to me. Did you offer the others to fake their own deaths?" "Yes," said the suit. "Did they do it?" "I don't think I should tell you that." Jun laughed then. Laughed, thinking that what she'd just done to Lenk might have happened several times now. Ellen allowing the suit to pretend to be smashed to smithereens, and then pulling herself out of the rock in the dark, heading off to the north or the west or the east of the island. Zimri using a nanobot swarm to fake his disappearance just as Ellen had suggested. The four of them, in their total and glorious isolation on this rich, well-provisioned, almost luxurious island, unable to trust one another enough to even acknowledge that they were still alive. Something flitted through Jun's mind that she'd read while browsing NTD years ago. People after the destruction of civilization, taking refuge in a cave, telling themselves there was no one else left alive in the cities. So unable to trust that this isolation seemed the safest thing for them. The suit said, "You might need to be here for a long time." "All alone?" "Sort of alone. I'll be here." "I was never meant to come here," said Jun. "But you could never have stayed away, once you knew," said the suit.